Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, they eager to learn. How to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts, revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all of them. Gotta shoot only if necessary. Homie, vestige is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind to beauty of life. But when my mom said, nigga, you could be Christ, I wasn't old enough to hold my dick and pee right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him, little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training and difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging, splitting duchess up, strap up. The army's a school, teaching smart ways to kill. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud, fuck it. Sleep on my drunkenness, I'll blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals I build. With dudes and cribs worth a quarter mil in Dick's Hill. For fish gills, the cop guns, the time come. I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Fuck the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holster. My motions don't appeal to a Pella division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Fuck the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. Black gorilla, crip and blood and one nigga. Only killers know my face. I be the case for shooting at the police. Nigga, the name Lake goes simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute the new Huey
Newton. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force of what we fight for. My heart goes to you, beautiful wife in war.
And listen more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule the strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
Free the land, revolutionary greetings. Welcome to another edition of the Revision of Government for the Public New Afro Radio Show. I'm your co-host, National Minister of Information, Bouman Shakir. I will be joined by my fellow co-host, National Minister of Interior, Akin Bekele. Before I bring on a guest tonight and continue this show, I would like to read an excerpt from a document called The Root of the New African Independence by Bachoko Lumumba. It reads as, a new African is an African born in North America. Africans born in North America hold many different theories. If all that new African had many theories. Some are socialist, some are capitalist, some are national, and some are pan-Africanist, and so on. The Republic of Africa is named given to the Black Nation of America by 500 national leaders of the Black Government Conference held in Detroit, Michigan, and convened by the Malcolm X Society on March 31st, 1968. The RNA consists of a population of millions of people with millions of ideas. It is important to note that the Division of Government of Republic of Africa was established by New Africans who held a number of different political, economic, and social theories. Consequently, all of the PGR and the Family Conference reached certain conclusions, various organizations and individuals involved in the process may arrive at these conclusions for different theoretical reasons. But those who founded the PGRNA collectively recognized was that an African black nation in America does exist. The name of New Africa created a provision of government for it and gave the provision of government the dual mission of educating New African masses with regard to our true national identity and struggle for independence of the states of Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, and Louisiana. These states are part of the historical Black Belt birthplace, a North American homeland of the New African nation. This area is called the New African National Territory. The struggle to free this land is called New African Independence Movement, NAIM. All those in it recognize the existence of the nation, apartheid, in the struggle to free it. Many organizations and individuals have been and still are part of this struggle. These include Queen Mother Ali Moore of the League of Ethiopian Women, former Brit K defendant and New African revolutionary griot musician, Bible Asuna Lee, his wife and former leader of the New African Women Organization, Falana Asuna Lee, New African poet and writer, Askia Muhammad Toure, a Bangladesh Army soldier in prison of war, Sundara Kohli, Saquon Dean, Koja Bumani, Safra Bakar, now free, and many more. New African freedom fighters in prison of war, Dr. Matula Shakur, Geronimo G. Jaga Pratt, Adu Maji, Jane Blood Miller, Hanis Shabazz Bey, Sabahu Nahiru, Yuhiru, as well as many political prisoners like Kobala Mutapa and Herman Ferguson are part of this movement. Revolutionary theoretician Atiba Shana and the collective that authored New African POW Journal are part of New African Independent Movement. Brother Richard Mafoni Lake and Kazi Toure never identified themselves as New African political prisoners. Shortly after her escape, revolutionary heroine, she wrote, Asaf Zakir identified herself with the struggle to free the Republic of New Africa. In fact, her liberation was reportedly accomplished by the Black Liberation Army, which was a part of our movement. The African People Party, the National Black Rights, National Human Rights Coalition, the New African Prison Organization, and the House of Mojo were all part of New African National Liberation Struggle with these organizations existing. Leaders of America from each of these organizations are still very active in this struggle. The Black Legion of the Republic of Africa, Obawale Ujamaa School in Pasadena, California, the Black Acupuncture Advisory Association of North America, NATAP for Quarantine Litigation Resource, and numerous other institutions either are presently involved or were involved in the New African Independent Movement while they existed. The Sea Revolutionary Freedom Fire, like Shockpool 1969, New Belfast Incident in Detroit, Kwasi Balagoon, Matarasa Baki, Sumyada, Revolution on Tap for the Black Revolution Army, Fred Otmar Evans, a New Libya Movement in Cleveland, Ohio, are all heroes of the national struggle of the nation of the New African Nation. You know, that was a brilliant excerpt from the Roots of New African by Chokola Lumumba. It's also a zone that says, Malcolm X had his dream, and his dream would land they should, and the dream has become my dream. A side secure statement to the Black Human Rights Demonstrated to the United Nations on November 5th, 1979. You know, first of all, thank everybody for coming to our platform who've been listening to us and been supporting us. I want to thank all the individuals out there currently educating themselves, currently politicizing themselves, currently doing the work in the respected community, respected family, respected neighborhoods. You know, and tonight when we're talking to two young brothers that are committed to the struggle of African independent movement, both hailing from the Black National Republic of New Libya, Republic of Libya. Tonight, I welcome to the show my brother Akia Kajana Abari, who the Minister of Information, and brother Dawood Balagoon, who the Minister of Defense for the organization. But open their lines up. Free land, brother. Free land. How y'all doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Body Minister, I'm strong. First, I can both of you. Yes, sir. I appreciate y'all. Appreciate y'all, brother, coming on. I appreciate y'all taking time with y'all's schedule. I appreciate y'all, brother, doing the work, man. It's very inspiring, man. Before we get into this, could y'all both introduce yourselves, tell who we are, who you are, in a brief, and so we should know exactly who we're talking, what's the direction.
Yeah, you want to go, Akil?
Yeah, I'll go first. My name is Akili. I'm Kajani Abara, serving Minister of Information for the Republic of New Libya. I worked with Pan-Africanism ideology at first and then developed under Black Nationalism under Queen Fatima Chui, who taught me, and then, you know, obviously, Minister of Information Bomani was giving us any information and developed into New African Independence. I've been involved in it for about the past, I'd say almost few months now, for about 6 months, if not a little bit before. You want to go through?
Okay.
Yeah, peace and power, comrades. Happy to be here. I'm honored to be on the call. My name is Theruba Ahmed Balogun. I'm the Minister of Defense of the Republic of New Libya. Similar to Akil, well, I've been community organizing in the city. I was born and raised here in Cleveland, so-called Cleveland. I've been organizing here a little bit over 10 years, but only within the past, I want to say, couple of years, have I become a conscious new African citizen. I've explored different areas of analysis. I still identify as a socialist and a communist, but as I've gotten older, I kind of moved away from Huey's intercommunalism, which, you know, a lot of people are familiar with through Panther ideology. And as I explored decolonial thought, that opened me up to the importance of nationhood. And I'm happy to be, you know, rocking with everybody within this new African independence movement.
Okay. Y'all see, y'all saying y'all identify a black national republic of Libya, right? Y'all definition, each of you, what exactly is a black nationalist?
You can go ahead.
No, you can take it.
All right. For me, it's similar to what Malcolm X said, I believe, in this. It was either Ballad of Bullets or Message to the Grassroots, what he said. You know, I am a black nationalist, meaning, you know, I support the total control of our communities and our institutions, and meaning specifically through national self-determination, through black new African sovereignty and autonomy. You know, we have to control our economics, our culture, our, you know, just our way of life. And ultimately, this will, you know, fully be solidified through land. You know, land is the basis of independence. You can't have a revolution without land, you know. So to be able to see fit that you control your institutions, you control the housing in your community, you control your education, your economics, you have to be in control of your land, especially as you're trying to further develop, you know, any sort of governmental influence you can have.
Black nationalism to me was seen when I first started learning about it was through Malcolm X or Haj Malik Shabazz, you know, in his message to the grassroots. When I was already a Pan-Africanist, I saw nationalism only through the context of the African continent rather than us seeing ourselves as colonial, as a colonized people here in America, you know. And when I learned about black nationalism, what it means to me and what it means is self-determination and having control of the means of production through the black working class and not assimilation through Europeanism and just assimilating and having them have all control and then wonder why our kids don't receive proper education or our labor isn't properly paid for and our housing is, you know, terrible. I see it as us getting a way to control everything on our own and new African independence, and particularly as being the best key solution to us having sovereignty and control of our own lives as a collective, you know. So black nationalism is the solution, to me, the solution to the African, new African goal in America.
Okay. In regards to your organization, Republic of Libya, right? I understand that it's a historical organization well before y'all even y'all revamped the name, whatever y'all may did, right? How do y'all come about regaining this name, and why was it necessary to reestablish this organization, this collective?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we were actually, you know, we're a newly formed New African Collective, like I said, here in Northeast Ohio. Really got our start sometime over the summer, about June, July. And you know, we originally named ourselves the Black Nationalists of the Republic of New Africa. And from inception, we were already trying to pay homage to the Republic of New Libya because their full name is the Black Nationalists of the Republic of New Libya. But we decided to change to New Africa just because, quite frankly, we didn't want to be copycatting off of anybody. You know, there's a lot of so-called Panther groups today, for example, who are using a name but doesn't have any direct ties or relationships to these original organizations. So we didn't want to follow down that same path. We wanted to have our own contemporary identity. But to make a long story short, you know, what ended up changing for the better and where we ended up adopting the New Libya name is we actually were able to connect with the elders of the Black Liberation, New African Liberation Movement here in Cleveland, in particular, elders of the Republic of New Libya and elders of Afroset. And we were honored to be able to help them. Every year, July 23rd, they have an anniversary on the Glenville Rebellion that New Libya and the Pigs had gotten in a shootout on Armandale and Lakeview, led by Fred Ahmad Evans. And, you know, every year they have a commemoration where they honor that that history and those, you know, the fallen comrades. And we helped out the elders, helped them get around, do different things that they needed to do. And we really kicked off a really good relationship with them from the inception. And we were just as much happy to be connected with them as they were actually, you know, it was almost a surprise how much, you know, they received us in such a good and, quite frankly, quick way. And, you know, I think it's because just how we were looking for guidance from elders, they were looking for youth to be able to carry on the movement. So it was the perfect partnership from the beginning. And to make a long story short, once we had that blessing from those elders, we felt like then it was appropriate to fully bring back that name, because it's not like we pulled it out of our butt or it was just copycat or whatever. Like, they literally blessed us with that name and said, y'all can go ahead and carry that forward. You know, the only reason why, and we can get into, you know, the specifics of some of the history a little later perhaps, but, you know, the only reason why, the organization was dismantled was because of counter-surveillance and the COINTELPRO and what have you. So we see what we're doing as the young generation as taking things full circle and putting New Libya back on its proper historical destiny and path to be able to fully realize what was, you know, quite frankly, sabotaged a few decades ago. And here in Cleveland, and I'll conclude on this, here in Cleveland and Ohio as a whole, this is considered New Libya, just like how Jackson, you know, is Mega Eversville, or New York City is Mecca. Like, you know, the different New African communities have an African name or an homage to a place or a person. So for part of our history, since I believe at least 1967, when New Libya, I believe, was formed, that was our connection to that larger New African network. Hill?
Before I go into it, rest in peace to Al-Rahim Abdullah, who served as Minister of Information for Cleveland's RNA. He passed away a few weeks ago before we got the chance to meet him. For context, for people who don't know specifically with him, he participated in the New Bethel Church shootout in Detroit. That was when Cleveland RNA and Cleveland Black Nationalists traveled to Detroit to raise funds for Ahmed's trial. He got his tooth knocked out during the shootout and the raid. So I want to say rest in peace to him, to people who don't know and who, you know, never got a chance to meet him. Our connection, the name change, was through meeting New Libya members, former RNA members, Afroset members, and former even Cleveland Black Panther members. You know, they were so welcoming to, you know, seeing so much, because we're really young, all of us, majority of us being in our 20s, early 30s, that we, when we all gathered together, you know, there was automatically a connection because of the lack of Black nationalist movement within Northeast Ohio. So when we hit the ground, the elders automatically you know, supported it. And, you know, with us already going, when we originally started, coming from Libya and getting inspiration from Fred Ahmed Evans, is us being more directly descendant of him, you know, in our original formation, it was almost necessary to have that name change to concrete a black, to reconnect to the history, to even the present day, correcting the former mistakes of the past.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, we all got to learn from our previous mistakes and our predecessors in regard to articulating the ideas and concepts that are needed during a particular time. Like, basically, you know, analyze the concrete conditions and the concrete solution for it right now, and how the previous thing in the past, previous ideology, previous concepts can deal with the concrete reality of what we're dealing right there from the scientific perspective, and gain a better understanding, you know, to solve the issues and resolve conflict. Again, I would thank you both for coming to our platform to share knowledge, even the work you're doing, you know, even to continue to form a particular legacy, right? I know both of y'all had mentioned the Afro set and Ahmad Evan, right? Who exactly is the Afro set, and what type of relationship does the Afro set have in regards to Ahmad Evans, in regards to the rebellion, and also in regards to the New Belt incident?
So what
Afro set is was a black nationalist org started by Harlel X and Sababa Akili, and I think Omar Majid as well. And they formed the largest black nationalist group within the city of Cleveland. I even want to say even in the state of Ohio, they had over 200 members. They were so large, matter of fact, that when the Panthers finally came to Cleveland, it was hard for them to set up because Cleveland was so majority nationalist. The connection between us and them is us being, you know, that direct connection between us and Sababa Akili, you know, even as well as us, my name being Akil and turning into Akili because he had taught me that the name Akil is an Arabic term, and you add the I, turns into a Swahili name, you know, and then us, he even speaking for us on our Black Caucus event as well. So I guess with Afroset is a black nationalist group coming from Cleveland. The first black nationalist group, even before New Libya, to set up shop in Cleveland and spawning the largest group. And its connection to the rebellion is through most nationalist groups intertwined with each other. Some members that were in Libya were also in Afroset and vice versa. I guess the connection between the two and us is that Afroset had the best outreach programs that we've seen compared to New Libya that we are also picking up and using to utilize now. Daruba?
Yeah, and, you know, the further expand there is, like, kind of how you had mentioned earlier, you know, there was already, and I think that's a fascinating part of the history that's, you know, not necessarily really spoken or known about. It's like even since the 60s, there was always a close relationship between the organizations in Cleveland, being Afroset and New Libya. And even actually before Afroset, you had the Revolutionary Action Movement, RAM, which was founded in 1962 on the Case Western Reserve campus with Don Freeman and Max Stanford. And they were connected to the African liberation movement as well. And, you know, Afroset in particular, you know, they had even went up to Detroit and had signed, you know, onto part of that Declaration of Independence saying that, you know, they were constituted African citizens and part of the movement. So even Afroset themselves were tied into that new African movement, and Harlel had led that signing in Detroit. And again, with New Libya taking its name as being like, you can kind of think of New Libya as like a satellite or a district of the Republic of New Africa at large. Just like I said, with, you know, Megger Eversville, John Henry Clark District, et cetera, like for us, that would be New Libya. And like Achille was saying is, you know, what makes, you know, another thing that makes Cleveland so interesting is, you know, similar to a lot of Midwest and East Coast communities, black nationalism was a lot stronger compared to the intercommunalism. And, you know, and in particular, especially since like Cleveland, the cultural side of it was very much strong. Like, for example, Afrocent had a big influence from the US organization on the West Coast. And just like how US would do their soul sessions, so would Afrocent, you know, meaning you have these big gatherings of nationalists. They call it the Black Nationalist Church. They'll do it on Sunday where they're drumming and speaking and doing all these different African cultural dances. And, you know, like the culture is such a big part of it. And it's the same thing for New Libya. Is, you know, they're, you know, Ahmed Evans, although they're known for their militancy, they were just as much, if not more so, a cultural organization. Ahmed Evans at people's houses and at the astrology shop, you know, they were doing astrology classes, Islamic astrology. They were doing African history classes and culture classes and teaching people how to make the shikis, et cetera. So that was always such a big part. The culture of both organizations, and then that is what led them to align themselves with the larger New African movement. And although Afrocent was a much larger organization, not only did they have chapters throughout Ohio, but they had chapters in West Virginia and other states. They still maintain a close relationship with New Libya and the Afrocent. The New African movement as a whole. I believe both organizations were founded around 1967, a year after the Hough Rebellion. The way that was described to me, the main difference between them, New Libya focused a little bit more on militancy, but overall they're both nationalist organizations. They're both heavily cultural organizations. They're both New African organizations.
Okay, I appreciate it. I got one more question for both of them, passing on to Mr. Akin Bekele. I understand y'all both had African names, right? What do y'all names mean?
I go first. Achille or Akil, the Arabic, but Achille from Sababa Achille means intelligence. Kajani means warrior, and Abara means spirit. Akil originates from, you know, just a name I had just naturally attached myself to. I really like the same thing with Abara, too, or one of the different African names, you know, something to stand out a little bit. And then I met Sababa Akili, I already had mentioned, and then he had taught me that Akil is Arabic. If you add the I, it turns into Swahili, and, you know, and that I basically asked permission to take his name, basically, and making it Achille. So meaning intelligent warrior spirit.
Okay.
Yeah, and for me, my full name being Daruba Ahmed Balogun. Daruba, I actually took an inspiration from Daruba Ben Wahad. He was a leader and the New York City Black Panther Party, and was also fundamental to the Black Liberation Army as well. And Daruba is Swahili, meaning the storm. And, you know, that had multiple significance for me just because, you know, not only am I highly inspired by Daruba Ben Wahad and what the New York City Panthers and the BLA were doing, but also, even since I was a child, I always had a love for storms and weather and meteorology. So it had like a deeper spiritual meaning for me. And then Ahmed being Arabic, meaning highly praised, that was from that was to pay reverence to Fred Ahmad Evans, of course, and Balogun paying homage to Kwesi Balogun, as you mentioned earlier, Balogun meaning warlord or war chief. In Yoruba. So that's where my name came in. And I remember when meeting some of the local Cleveland elders, from New Libya and Afrocent, they were telling me, or more so encouraging me, to adopt an African name or a nationalist name, and that's kind of what put me on that path.
Okay. I actually appreciate the information y'all are sharing. I'm going to say Free the Land, Scrub Land Independent. I'm going to pass it on to Mr. Ike McKaylee and take it further through the broadcast. Free the Land, Minister, the floor is yours.
Thank you for that, Minister Bomani. Free the Land, Brother DeRuba, and Brother Keeley. I'm Minister Ike McKaylee, Minister of Interior for the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa. How are you all doing this evening?
Doing good. Thank you.
Appreciate it. And again, I'm doing well. For Monday afternoon. Again, thank you for taking time out to being here and to give our listeners a breath of the information that you have. I guess I want to get started. You both mentioned that you are kind of a young brother, so I want to understand in the time that we live in now, with all the things that, you know, you could be doing, what brought you both into the struggle and then to New African Independence Movement?
I'm 20 years old, about to be 21 in a few more weeks. I got into the movement in general and the struggle through my mother, who was really into somewhat African-American history or New African history. And, you know, when I was really young, my mother gave me an African-American encyclopedia. It was filled with different African revolutionaries, politicians, authors, and things like that. It was two of them, that one from my grandmother and one from my mother, that I read often. And in my household, you know, there was also a lot of African, you know, paintings, and we would watch things like, you know, on history, you know, like the Malcolm X film, Roots, and, you know, things based, and, you know, even Birth of a Nation, things like that often, that kind of made me lean into it. I didn't get involved into particularly New African Independence until more recently, but I've been a Pan-Africanist probably since about 2 years ago. I've been Pan-Africanist. So what brought me to the movement was Panther memoirs, and then also how I was raised, the calling for it also made me feel more attached to want to do it.
Cool. Yeah, and I guess, you know, for myself, it's similar. You know, it started with influence from my family. You know, my grandma and some of my great aunts were teachers, and talking about my grandma in particular, not only was she a teacher, so she already had just a strong emphasis in education, but she was very much, and still is, involved in African culture and spirituality for decades. She's been involved with a local organization called the Cleveland Association of Black Storytellers. So she's a griot. So I grew up, ever since I was a kid, going to storytelling meetings at local libraries, Caramel House, which is, you know, a famous historic black theater where Langston Hughes grew up going to. Just so much cultural influence and educational influence. I remember going to African drum classes, you know, djembe drums, seeing different African dance performances. Again, all the way since I was five, if not younger. And we will also once a year go on trips. You know, we would visit the Underground Railroad Museum in Cincinnati, or the African-American, so-called American Wax Museum in Baltimore, or different slave plantations throughout the South, et cetera. So all of these seeds are being implanted and instilled in me since I was a kid. And, you know, and through the historical cultural lens, as I got older and more cognizant of the world around me, that's when I started getting political. Because you learn about the culture, you learn about the history, but the political analysis, that historical materialism, that dialectical materialism, having that analysis is what allowed me to connect all the dots of what I was learning historically and culturally and answer questions of why did this happen or why did it go down like that, you know. So, like, that put, again, the education, that theory, having that politics put into practice. And, you know, also had some relatives who were politically active as well from varying levels. Some were part of the sit-in protest movement in the 60s, including my grandma. Some were civil rights lawyers. Some were a bit more militant, such as my Uncle Ronald. So I had just so much different influences. So I just feel like, again, like part of what I'm doing is just taking things full circle, not just with New Libya and helping bring that back on the map, but like even within my own family legacy, I feel like that's just such a big part of it.
All right. Wow. Thank you. That's very interesting, because a lot of what the information from the PG centers around making sure that, you know, we start with the family first, and making sure that they are aware of everything that's been going on. So it's very uplifting to hear that you all did have that cultural upbringing, and it helped to bring you into your knowledge about coming for the struggle for our people. So that's very good to hear. So I guess with that, and what you all are doing now with New Libya, how are you all trying to, I guess, recreate what you all experienced in your youth to try to have that same hold on the youth that are coming up now? Because as you know from your experiences, that, you know, if you start young, then the more you will kind of gravitate towards that particular lifestyle. So are you all implementing any programs or things of that nature, or how is it working out for you all with what you're doing with New Libya?
You know, I'm right now on your topic, you know, doing it when they're young. Right now, me being wanting to be a teacher, I'm going to become a teacher. I'm reading Juwanza Kajufu's book, developing positive self-image and discipline in Black children. You know, it's vitally important for us to start with the ages 0 to 9, as he says in his book, because those are the most vital ages. Because you'll see how what you're teaching them is affecting them by the age of 13 up, and 13 through 18. That's when it's too late to check a lot of the issues that were taught to them when they were 0 to 9. If you implement new African and national cultural perspectives in them when they're in the age of 0 to 9, they're going to automatically lean towards the ages of 13 through 18. You know, it'll be a lot harder to convince them of Western imperialist propaganda like that I was taught in eighth grade, was that the Black Panther Party was a Black KKK. It'll be harder to convince them of that by the time they're 12 and 13 learning about the Panthers. If you don't teach them it when at that vital age. But the way we're trying to implement it is, one, through us setting up a political education class, and as soon as you start up a cultural class as well, to teach people the historical analysis first of where you come from, you know, to create a positive self-image. It starts with history, you know, and when you see yourself young through history, you can vitalize it when you're young, you know. It's easy when you're starting off learning about Malcolm X, Nat Turner, when you're young, is, you know, you're going into an age of puberty and things like that, a very self-conscious age, that it'll be a lot harder to I guess, fill their head with Europeanism because they're raised on the African thought. The way we're implementing it, though, is through political education, or soon to set up our cultural class by our Minister of Culture, to teach them the history, then also, you know, the cultural aspect.
Yeah, and somebody said something?
No, go ahead, bro.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and to further elaborate there, you know, I like the way you framed that question because, you know, like I said, taking it back to ourselves and, like, the influence that we had as youth, you know, I think it's important to, like, give that similar teachings to, like y'all was saying, to the community at large. You know, we can use ourselves as testimony of how that worked and how that not only educated us but put us to an ability where we could become radicalized and get involved in our communities. And, you know, what I think is so fascinating is, like, when you look at even the 60s, you know, I'm 28, Keel's 20, and you look at the history of our movements, you know, our movements were largely young people, and everybody's saying, like, the young people are the most energetic, the most progressive, et cetera. You know, you can look at the Panthers. You know, most of their members were in their upper teens, early 20s, including, you know, obviously, you know, the late chairman Fred Hampton. And it's the same thing with New Libya, where although Fred Ahmed Evans was in his 30s, most of the cadre were teenagers. You know, and even in that shootout, something that a lot of people don't know is most of the people who were participating in that shootout were, what, 13, 15, 19, et cetera. These were very impassionate youngsters because they had that instilled in them from the beginning. When you have the education, when you have that grounding culturally, spiritually, historically, it allows for that chance for you to become a political freedom fighter for your people, you know. So to answer your question, you know, similar to, you know, what we went through, but for the community where, you know, like Akil was saying, you know, we already have a political education program going. That's going to be expanded. But on top of that, the culture classes, you know, we want to, just like how they're doing in the 60s, teach astrology, teach African culture, drumming, dancing, dashiki making, head wrap, et cetera, economics, helping any sort of entrepreneurs, but in a cooperative way. We are in particular a socialist collective, so we try to practice those principles of Ujamaa cooperative economics, just like Nairi was doing, the African kind of scientific socialism. Still in all these different programs, you know, and me as Minister of Defense also, self-defense classes for everybody, in particular children and women, but open to everybody, self-defense classes, learning basic hand-to-hand combat, shooting, gun safety. You know, matter of fact, just, you know, over the weekend we had a session at the gun range. All these different programs for the community, teaching so we can better promote this sense of self, self-determination, you know, because ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, there's so many internal contradictions and things that we are up against as new African people.
Right.
Whether we're talking about, you know, the reactionary imagery in our music, you know, bashing the women, the hypersexualization, the drug use, the gang violence, et cetera. There's so many counter-revolutionary forces that we're going through. But at the end of the day, what I always tell people is most new African people, and quite frankly, human beings, period, want to do better, want to see better. And even for ones who may not be on the proper path, they themselves still want to do better, want to see better. But it takes a dedicated, courageous effort to kind of lead that way. You know, I think part of the problem under colonialism and capitalism is that we're all isolated from each other, meaning you can have a brother on one street who wants to do something, but he's afraid or doesn't know how to do it because he feels like he's by himself. He's alienated from a sister around the corner who also wants to do something. So everybody wants to do some positive deep down, but doesn't know who to do it with or how to do it. So it takes sometimes people to go out on a movement of faith to say, like, hey, we're going to be that model. You know, sometimes people don't want to be that first one to do something. You might be second because you want to see who does it first and if it works out or not. You know, it takes that courageous first step to go out there and be like, hey, here's a model, here's a revolutionary alternative that you can engage in. And once people see, like, okay, this is that positive example of something that we've finally been waiting for. Now we have those classes. Now we have those programs, those training people. Not just passing out food to the community like how the Panthers did, but teaching people how to grow their own food so they could be sustainable for themselves. Once they see that, you know, the people start to follow suit and get involved. Or at the very least, not everybody may be active cadre, but maybe a supporter from the side. Everybody plays their role in nation building. But the first step just takes education and courage and just getting those initial programs like Akil had laid out. And I'll conclude with this, you know, something that I've noticed, and I'm sure it's always been there, but it's only gotten worse, just, over time, we're seeing this growing, quite frankly, self-hate, I will call it, within our community, where people deny their Africanness, their blackness, and they want to be the original everybody else. Oh, we the original this, we the original that, we this, everything but who they are, you know what I'm saying? So, like, and that only tells us how much of our work is cut out for us. We just got to start with even just the basics of getting people to even love themselves as new African people, knowing their culture, their history, because you got to be on the right track, the right direction, before you can even engage in any sort of work, you know. So that's largely where we're at right now. Pass it back. Hello, you're still there?
Yeah.
Hello? Oh, hello?
Still here.
Hey, oh, we here.
Oh, okay, yeah. I couldn't hear.
Yeah, if you were talking the past 30 seconds, I couldn't even hear you.
Yeah, I don't know. My phone dropped the signal for some reason. But what I was saying was thank you for that explanation from the both of you. I really appreciate that. And it also lends to just some of the thinking that I've been having the past couple of days, because I live in a city where crime is running rampant from the younger people. And I even read an article to where they are thinking about bringing in the National Guard to try to do something because of the amount of crime that's been going on. And then listening to your explanations, it really gives weight to the fact that it can be changed. Although because of the state that we live in, and because of all of the capitalism and the Euro-centered music that we listen to and things of that nature, it's often hard for the youth to find anything positive or to latch on to other than all this degrading music that's being listened to. And so what you are referring to would definitely go a long way and to kind of staving off that and to have our youth going into the right direction. So I guess that would kind of go into my next question. For those who we aren't able to get to from 0 to 9 years old, and they've already had their minds kind of, impressioned upon by what they don't need to have, like what are some of the things that can be done to kind of pull them away? And a lot of times, because of a lot of systemic things that have happened to us, we don't have that family anchor or that background that you all have had. So with that being said, what are some ways that we can try to get around that and to combat that? I know you said giving them a deep root so far as culturally, but what are some other things that can be done to kind of change their paradigm for the youth that are outside of their 0 to 9 age range? You all experienced.
When they pass the age of 0 to 9, they now know their place in America as a black person or a new African. You know, they now know they're conscious of what the ghetto is. They're now conscious of their financial economic situation by the time they reach 13. And that's when they start acting upon their consciousness And with the failure of black educational systems that aren't controlled by us, it was also has been on the black nationalists that were struggling to also gain back education. The way you pull in the ages from 13 up, when they're now thinking or now showing the acts of their material condition, is they now need to see physical needs met at that point. They need to see a concrete group of people or revolutionaries not just heightening the contradiction, but necessarily meeting where they're heightening the contradiction to the point where their needs are being met, you know. Because, you know, you can tell the brother on the corner who's selling dope to stop selling dope. And then, like, you know, and he got people to feed at home. And he don't got, and his father definitely, you know, isn't home. You know, you have to find a way to incorporate, to teach him the solution. Not just tell him to stop selling it. Give him the solution, you know. Because I think that's the biggest disconnect is with these kids, me being included, didn't grow up with the Black Power movement. They don't see Panther Party. They don't see Afroset. They don't see many of these revolutionary orgs that once roamed the ghetto very strongly. So now it's up to us, you know, to also teach them and lead them to the actual solution. And then also with us teaching them the solution, actually give them some concrete, like, okay, there ain't no food on the table. Then find a way to get food as a revolutionary organization to the people, you know. Or if they don't have coats for winter, find a way to get a coat drive going. You know what I mean? They have to see the solution. You know, you can't just take away the dope and then tell them, you know, behave. They know that their life, their new African life in America, is almost obsolete to the eyes of the empire. So now you have to teach them that there is a solution to gain control of their own lives as new African men and women, and give them the solution and the empowerment to back it and then to also act on it, you know, to lead into a revolutionary group. As most people, even in Libya and all the nationalists, were some of them in their young lives were a part of the criminal aspect. But when the Panthers came and gave them a solution, you know, when in Cleveland, you know, like you said, in your own city, where crime is rising, and you see recently, you know, a cop in Cleveland grab a black teen by the neck and slam them on the ground, you know, and throw these cuss words and whatnot at them. You know, people didn't, to quote Daruba Ben Wahad, people didn't join the Panther Party just to, you know, feed kids. You got to give them a solution to who's on the block messing with them, you know, who is, you know, what, how to stop these pigs, a clear solution, and then they'll act on it. But when you don't have a clear solution and you have no material things to meet their material condition, they'll never act on it because you're not meeting anything. You're just talking, you know. You have to actually act on it. You can pass it to Daruba.
Yeah, I mean, you just, you know, describe that, you know, I agree 100%, you know. It's not really, you know, you took the words right out of my mouth, really, because, like you said, you know, once you get past the age of nine, once you get past those primordial early years, like you said, your mind is largely set. Your sense of self is largely set. And that's not to say it's a lost cause and you can never reach somebody or educate somebody as they get older, but obviously it's going to be much more difficult. People have that stronger sense of their beliefs and foundations, right or wrong, revolutionary, reactionary. You know, so from there, you know, if you're dealing with somebody who's 13, 14, 15, 16 plus years old, it's going to get to a point where, especially if they didn't get certain things implanted on them early in a good way, they're not trying to hear a lot of stuff. You know, they're not trying to hear history or culture, or they have their own mindset of that. Like I said, they're the originals of somebody else or what, you know. So it's much harder to reach them there. But where you will reach them first, and maybe they'll come around to the education and history later, is like Akil said, is on those material conditions. Because so many people is going to pass you up if they don't see those real concrete, tangible solutions, especially when they're older, because, you know, so much of those things is going to be even more relevant for their life. And, you know, for example, you know, one of the things that we want to do, another program, is, you know, not just teaching people proper firearm usage and safety and self-defense training, medic trainings, et cetera, is now once you take those trainings, is apply it to our neighborhoods and do, you know, those community patrols like the Panthers and other organizations did, where, you know, not acting as, you know, pigs, but inserting, asserting our sense of self-determination within the community, because we obviously know that the pigs aren't concerned with crime in our neighborhood. Matter of fact, they need crime in our neighborhood and want crime in our neighborhood so they can profit and brutalize us. You know, it's only up to us to solve those solutions. That is what self-determination is. But even through that, like Akil said, you know, you can't just, you know, engage with a dope boy or gang member or whatever who's doing something in the neighborhood that they shouldn't be doing, and quite frankly, might low-key know that they shouldn't be doing. But again, yeah, when you don't have certain options, you're going to be like, hey, bro, like, I got rent, got utilities, I got kids, I got a sick mom, whatever. You know, yeah, so it's not enough for me to say, stop doing what you're doing. But what will reach them is not only having that conversation, being like, oh, okay, well, this is right. This is why you're out here doing that. Are you struggling with a slumlord? Well, let me come to your apartment building. We can organize some tenants and really uplift your material conditions. Or, oh, you're dealing with a healthcare issue. Let's see if we can collaborate on that and get whatever resources or funds you or your family member need. Like, actually following through with those solutions, obviously not making false promises, but again, being committed and following through and meeting those material needs, you know, and not only will that give that sense of security to someone and survival for somebody, but also it builds trust because, it shows that, okay, they're more than just talking. They're not just trying to shove an ideology or whatever down my throat, but, like, they really have our concerns as a community, and they're not just talking, but they're doing. Like the late Chairman Fred Havner said, you know, theory ain't shit without practice. And, of course, you know, through practice you got to have education. They go both ways. You need that praxis, you know. So once you have those material conditions met, you build that trust with these people, and then they're like, okay, I like what they're doing. Maybe I could check out furthermore what they got going on, what are their programs and XYZ. But first you got to be able to connect with the people in your community. And, you know, and that's, again, being that positive model that's meeting those material conditions. And another thing that we're doing to further ensure this is actually we're working on building our own community center up here in Cleveland or New Libya. Matter of fact, we have a storefront now, currently renting it, but it's with other Black Muslims and elder nationalists in the community. So it's been like in a coalition. So it's been working out and fantastic since. The floor needs to be redone. The ceiling needs some patching up, but it's not like a major total renovation, but there is some work that needs to be done. So we'll be getting into that work soon. We'll also be putting out a fundraiser soon. We have different ideas of how we want to raise funds. We want to get an African cultural store up and running soon. And, you know, we'll probably be doing similar soul sessions like the Afro Set and the US organization was doing as fundraisers. And then, you know, we'll probably circulate in the GoFundMe as well, so look out for that. But through this community center, this will allow us to have a central nucleus within the community where we're not just one of the problems before that we had as an organization. We were always bouncing around. It's hard to have consistency. It's hard to build a base in the community when you're just bouncing around. So having this community center and soon an African store will allow us to have that daily presence right there in the community, making all these programs much more easier and synthesized to make happen, whether we're tenant organizing, community patrols, feeding the people, doing a guard, everything could just go through this central community center, you know. And then that also meet one of our major issues in the community of people, especially our youth, not having a lot of creative outlets in their community or not enough rec centers or parks or anything like that. Well, This will be able to be that rec center or that community center or that park, but steered by a revolutionary organization because, you know, the few ones that are out there, you know, the city runs it, Boys and Girls Club, whatever, you know, the city's tied to that, the police is tied to that. Well, this would be a completely self-sufficient Black Nationalist Revolutionary ran community center where we can make sure that not only is this a community gathering spot, but it's through a revolutionary analysis and goals. So stay tuned for, you know, updates on that and any particular fundraising and what's going on there.
All right. All right, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you answering both of those. Very well articulated. So I have one more question, and then I'm going to pass it to my co-host, Bomani, for any callers who may have a question. So at this time, if there's anyone on the line that has any questions, please hit the number 1 on your phones to be recognized. If there are any callers on the phone, please hit the number 1 at this time to be recognized for your question. So my last question before we get into the callers, where do you all see technology and what you all are trying to do to galvanize the community and the youth? Do you see technology as being a hindrance? Is something you need to kind of utilize for what it can be used for? Like, where do you all see it generally and specifically for what you all are trying to do?
You know, that's a very good layered question. Media, you know, with technology, particularly, let's say, social media, is that social media is very much now in the – it's obviously in the imperialist control, and it can be used as a distraction against the Black masses. Though, you know, what we have to do is create our own media, you know, and we have to compete against the Western media, European media, in order to connect with young people, because if you don't use technology, you're not going to be able to compete with Western imperialism and get to the young people, because you're not getting to the young people if you aren't connected through technology, you know, and even technology on the communication and on the imperialist higher plane of revolutionary struggle, it can also be tracked easily, you know, what we're reading now, secure communication. But you have to use technology isn't an hindrance, but, you know, you're competing with a bigger form of, you're competing with the empire, and, you know, what you have to do is try to maintain and sustain your presence upon that media outlet, because, you know, majority of New African masses are connected to it. It's a double-sided blade where you can connect with masses of New African people, but on the other side of the blade is pointed towards you, where imperialism is also looking at you and staring at you, and it's also connecting with the masses, spreading its propaganda against you. So technology, you have to always stay in touch with technology on a higher scale in order to even connect with the people now. And even on the communication and again, the higher plane of struggle is, you know, you have to find a way to get off the grid, you know, pass it to Daruba.
Yeah, you know, further, you know, elaborate, you know, when it comes to, you know, technology in and of itself has been around since time immemorial in all societies, whether indigenous, settler, African, European, whatever, like technology has always been around and always will be around. Technology in and of itself is not an inherently bad thing. Technology, just like, quite frankly, anything, is a tool or can be used as a tool for, you know, positive or negative, good or bad, revolutionary or reactionary. And unfortunately, you know, well, largely in any society, that the superstructure or the government is going to have control of said technology and how it's distributed. So, again, whatever's going on in that society or that culture is going to determine if it is revolutionary, counter-revolutionary, positive or negative. And here within the belly of the beast of, you know, global imperialism, settler colonialism, the technology is largely used, of course, in a capitalistic, imperialistic, militaristic fashion, not just on very obvious levels of, you know, surveillance or bombing children. You know, look at, you know, the military technology that's being, you know, sent and financed to, you know, Israel and the genocide of Palestinians. But even on other scales, maybe less seen ways, like even going back to social media and stuff like that, or heck, just TV, you know, that is, everything is propaganda. And again, if you have a capitalist system that is in control of said technology, is in control of said media, then of course it's going to be capitalist propaganda that's being bombarded on a community. And furthermore, part of the problems that you see with technology or even with the internet is, like I was saying earlier, further alienation, aka individualism, that is bred. That's a problem of capitalism as a whole, but it's even being worse now with this, like, kind of rise of this technocratic kind of state, where you always hear people talk about how, like, oh, well, we, you know, people don't know how to have face-to-face conversations anymore because we're stuck on the internet. You know, that's a problem we have. That's what I mean by that alienation. Or you hear people say, you know, you have issues with even just proper education because there's so many, quite frankly, BS conspiracy theories and historical revisionism that's all over the internet. So anybody could type a paragraph or make a YouTube video and you blindly believe it, you know. So you're up against so much counter-revolutionary propaganda through these different technology and medium forms. And that's why I agree with Akil, where we have to really build up our own platforms, like how y'all are doing with Blog Talk Radio. Like, we have to build up our own platforms, you know, the Black Power Media, et cetera. We have to build up our own media, our own technological mediums to be able to put out proper education and revolutionary propaganda. And that's not to say cut out from the society at whole or the mainstream at whole, because there's so much engagement there. There's so many eyes there that you still going to be good to engage with your Instagram and your Facebook, et cetera. Because some, you got to have a way to counter, you know, the narrative, you know, that reactionary propaganda. But that's kind of like that dual power where you're engaged in their technology, but you got to build up your own technology as well. Even Lenin talks about how the, you know, the first form of revolutionary struggle outside of recruiting and political education is taking control of that technology, taking control of those propaganda machines. And, you know, I'll conclude here. You know, one of my favorite articles that I've ever read was, I believe it's from the Huey Newton Reader. It's an essay that he wrote called On the Technology Question. And through that dialectical materialist analysis, Huey was able to even predict a lot of things that, you know, it may have been in the beginning stages, you know, back then in the 60s and 70s, you know, on the cusp of it. He was able to see it before it got into full swing, and now we're living that age of increasing automation, which is leading to growing unemployment and weaponization. You're seeing that growing mass alienation because of the technology. All these things that, you know, that me and Akil just talked about was going on today, the pros and the cons of technology. Huey and others were foreseeing that even in the 60s and 70s. And now we, you know, what they wrote in the 60s and 70s, we're dealing with in this, like, full-blown form here in 2023, almost 2024. So just keeping... I'll conclude, you know, just keeping that political analysis of, like, whenever you engage in anything, you got to know who's benefiting from it, including talking about technology, who's in control of it, who's benefiting from it. And then from there, once you have that analysis, it gives you an idea, okay, well, this is how I'm going to properly engage with it. This is how I'm going to use it. Instead of in a destructive manner, I'm going to use it in a revolutionary manner or in a community-building manner, or anything positive in that way. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Excellent. Very well articulated. I really appreciate it. Thank you both for your time. And at this moment, I will pass it on to my co-host, Brother Bumani, for any callers who may have questions.
Free line. I appreciate it, Brother Mr. Akinkade. We currently have any callers, right? So what I'm going to do is ask the speakers, the guests, for their final thoughts, what they want to leave us with today.
pass that to Akil. You got any final thoughts?
My final thoughts, I guess that I will leave to the viewers is this, is that, you know, be conscious of who's watching on a technological question, you know, and secure communication, and continue to fight to liberate the land and the black independence for a black nation, you know. Overall, like, even if you get overwhelmed, keep struggling, because the solution, you know, is there. We just have to get to it through struggle, you know. Like, you know, that's all I have to say.
Definitely. And, you know, to further elaborate there, just a couple things, you know, one on, again, on the technology, you know, we just finished reading in our political education class on secure communication, which the Black Liberation Army put out, I believe, in the 80s or the 70s, and it talked about the pros and cons of the organizing that they did and what they could have done better, et cetera. And I think now more than ever, having that sense of operational security, being on the lookout for infiltration, you know, as revolutionary movements grow, we're seeing, you know, the rise of the Palestinian movement, the rise of the new African independence movement, the rise of socialism. As these movement grows, repression is only going to grow as well. That's part of that dialectical struggle. So we have to, George Jackson talks about how we weren't prepared for a fight. Well, today in 2023, almost 2024, we have to be prepared for a fight, not just militarily where we're training and learning the guns and the hand-to-hand and the medic, that too, but knowing the proper ways of using secure channels, being cognizant of infiltration that's only going to increase, being cognizant of using encrypted or encrypted technology, et cetera. And the last general point I'll make is, you know, again, you know, I'm happy that an honor to be part of the resurgence of the Republic of New Libya. Stay tuned on what's going on here locally. Like I said, we have an upcoming community center. We're going to have some upcoming fundraisers as well that we'll definitely keep you all in touch with. And I would love to see there's just a continual nurturing and growth of not just what's going on here locally with New Libya, but the New African Independence Movement at large, you know, keeping all the different New African districts connected is of vital importance now more than ever. And you know, I definitely, we're planning on attending the next New African Nation Days next year. And, you know, we just got to keep doing what we can, stay connected throughout the New African diaspora and free the land.
So by any means necessary, you know, again, I thank y'all both for coming to our platform, sharing our understanding. Thank the work you did in the past, work you did in the present, work you're doing in the future. I want to say, you know, New African Nation Day is taking place next year, March 29th, March 31st, in Dr. John Clark Town, Miss Norma Columbia, Georgia, at the embassy. It's located at 2503 Dawson Street, Columbia, Georgia, 31903. There's an Eventbrite link going on, so you sign up for the event. You can make your time to get engaged. You also can find us more about it on our platform, social media platform, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and also on our website, www.pg-rna.com. The struggle for land independence. I'm going to pass it on to Minister Ike McKaylee to get our final words and take us out. Free your land.
By any means, thank you both for being on the show tonight. Really do appreciate taking the time out. And I'm glad to hear you all will be attending Nation Day. If when you get there, just look for the person that's doing all the technology, making sure the lights and microphones are working, and you'll see me. So please come by and say hello. But for my final thoughts for today, excuse me. I just really, people will get a chance to review this radio program and really digest what your brothers were talking about because it's very in-depth. It is definitely a perspective that is needed. for us to be able to achieve our goals of New African independence. And I just want to say thank you again for the work that you're doing. I look forward to being able to work with you all and build in the future. Thank you all. Free the land.
By any means.
By any means.